Good afternoon. The Senate Judiciary Committee meeting is called to order. Today is Wednesday, May 11th, 2022. The time is 1:33 p.m. We're meeting in State Capitol Room number 205. We have a full house today with Senator Myers, Senator Hughes, Senator Keel, Senator Schauer, and myself as Chair, Senator Holland. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Thank you to Nancy, our recording secretary, and Nate, our moderator for today. And as a reminder, please silence your cell phones if you have a warning. Up first, I'm going to bring House Bill 62 before the committee. This is the first hearing on House Bill 62 in Senate Judiciary. It is relating to marriage, witness, correction. It is relating to marriage, witness, solemnization, and consent. Representative Clayman, would you care to come up to the presenter's table and introduce any staff you may have brought along with you, offer your sponsor statement and your bill overview?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Representative Matt Clayman from House District 21 in West Anchorage. And this is Brianna Kakarik, part of my staff. Thank you for hearing House Bill 62 today. At present, during the solemnization of marriage, couples must assent to the marriage in the presence of each other, the person solemnizing the marriage, and at least two additional witnesses. Afterward, all parties must sign the marriage certificate. House Bill 62 would eliminate the requirement for two additional witnesses at the marriage solemnization to help support Alaska's destination wedding industry while preserving the integrity of marriage. House Bill 62 adds a requirement that a person verify that the parties intend to marry each other. Thus, both the person solemnizing the marriage and the person verifying the marriage sign the marriage certificate and provide contact information. Finally, House Bill 62 repeals the statute that allows a child who is 14 or 15 years old to marry, thus banning child marriage under 16 with no exceptions. It limits marriage of minors who are at least 16 years of age to those who want to marry a person who is no more than 3 years older. Thus, a minor may only marry if, first, they have parental consent and court approval, or second, they have court approval after the court finds that the parents are either A, arbitrarily and capriciously withholding consent, absent or otherwise unaccountable, in disagreement amongst themselves on the question, or last, unfit to decide the matter. Alaska is one of 20 states that require two wedding witnesses. 23 states in the District of Columbia do not require wedding witnesses. Wedding witnesses played a more critical role in past centuries when record keeping was not reliable. Witnesses could be contacted to verify the wedding had taken place if records were damaged or missing. Today, in contrast, record keeping is reliable and the role of a wedding witness is purely ceremonial. In Alaska, while the person solemnizing the marriage must meet certain criteria, under current law, no form of witness verification was required, just a name and a signature. House Bill 62 would allow Alaska to compete with states like Hawaii and Florida, which require no wedding witnesses and lead the nation in destination weddings. Destination weddings are a significant and growing business in Alaska. As shown in the chart we distributed, non-resident weddings, where both parties are non-residents, already comprise approximately 10% of all marriages in Alaska. The two witness requirement makes Alaska a less attractive location for many who travel from further away or who do not want the financial burden of a larger wedding. Couples who come to the state without their own witnesses are tasked with finding strangers to witness their wedding. The burden of supplying these witnesses often falls to those who work in Alaska's wedding industry to ask friends and family to witness the weddings of their out-of-town clients. The two-witness requirement can also add an increased financial burden on the couple. For example, at remote location weddings such as a glacier, where they'll fly on a helicopter, the couple must pay extra aircraft seating costs to transport the two additional witnesses. At present, destination weddings bring in an estimated $1 million in revenue to Alaska in the form of approximately 500 destination weddings a year. This revenue figure does not even account for the fact that more than 90% of the out-of-state couples who come to Alaska to get married stay for days and weeks to explore our great state. The resulting benefit to Alaska's tourism industry is substantial. House Bill 62 will help Alaska's tourism industry by allowing Alaska to compete with states on a level playing field. As a result of a House floor amendment, the legislation makes an important change to Alaska law regarding child marriage as described earlier. There is increased concern about the connection between child marriage and human trafficking and sex trafficking. Reducing or eliminating child marriage in Alaska is an important step toward improving public safety and combating trafficking. Research shows that the substantial majority of child marriages, 90% or more, involve a minor under the age of 18 and an adult who may be several years older, sometimes as much as 20 years older. As you will hear from the invited testimony, a substantial majority of child marriages end in divorce, approximately 80% compared to a divorce rate of approximately 50% for adult marriages. As we look to strengthen our economy and improve public safety, changing Alaska's child marriage law to reflect our community values is a much-needed step forward for our state. And with that, I'll pass you off to Brianna Kakarik, who can walk you through the sectional analysis.
Thank you, Representative Klayman. Please put yourself on the record.
Good afternoon, members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. For the record, my name is Brianna Kakarik, and I'm staff to Representative Klayman. Section 1 amends AS 2460.030, subsection A, by amending the Legislative Ethics Act to allow a legislator to accept travel and hospitality for solemnizing a marriage. Section 2 amends AS 2505.301, subsection B, to limit marriage to minors who are at least 16 years of age who want to marry a person who is no more than 3 years older. A minor may only marry if, one, they have parental consent and court approval, or two, they have court approval after the court finds that the parents are, A, arbitrarily or capriciously withholding consent, B, absent or otherwise unaccountable, C, in a disagreement among themselves on the question, or D, unfit to decide the matter. Section 3 amends AS 2505.301 by eliminating the requirement of two witnesses at a marriage solemnization ceremony and adds a person who verifies the marriage by, one, communicating with both parties to confirm their intent to marry, and two, signing the marriage certificate. The person verifying the marriage is not required to witness the ceremony. Section 4 amends AS 2505.321 by eliminating the requirement for two witnesses to sign the marriage certificate and adds a person who verifies the marriage by signing the marriage certificate. Section 5 amends AS 2505.321 by specifying that the person solemnizing the marriage and the person verifying the marriage must put their contact information on their certificate forms. Section 6 amends AS 2505.361 by deleting language to conform with changes made in Section 2 of the bill. Section 7 amends AS 05020 by deleting language to conform with changes made in Section 2 of the bill. Section 8 repeals subsections A3 and A5 of AS 2505.041 to conform with changes made in Section 3 of the bill. And finally, Section 8 repeals AS 2505.171, subsection A, to limit child marriage by conforming to changes made in Section 2 of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Brianna. At this time, I'll look to the committee. Are there any questions for the sponsor? Senator Schaffer.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Matt, welcome to the committee. Question for you. I've heard some concerns. A few constituents have asked about it, so just wanted to see what your answer would be. That one of the reasons for doing this, and I'm just passing this along, is that it would be to allow marriages that would not be considered, I guess, traditional, where you would have pastors, churches, other kinds of maybe, what's the right word, clergy. And so it would be opening it up to kind of a free-for-all, passing it along.
No.
So I see your face. But it's kind of an attempt or a workaround to move away from more conservative, and I don't mean that in the political sense,
traditional
marriages and ceremonies and witnessing and, you know, before God and your fellow man, blah, blah, blah. What would your answer to that be? And just for the record, thank you.
So I appreciate the question through the chair, Senator Sauer, Representative Matt Klayman. A few years ago, we passed legislation that allowed elected public officials to perform marriage ceremonies, and that was a bill that I sponsored, but that's been the law now. I think that passed somewhere in the last 8 years, probably in the last 5 or 6 years. We passed that law, and I've had a number of elected public officials, because it's not just legislators. It would be mayors and school, anybody who's been elected to public office and taken an oath of office, they can perform a marriage ceremony. So that happened a few years ago. And I've performed two wedding ceremonies that you would attend them, and say they seem pretty traditional. One was a small backyard wedding. 15 people were there. Another was up in the Matsu at the Government Hill Chalet. I think there were probably about 150 people there. And I was just the guy performing the ceremony. I don't think it's any end run. I think already today you can go down, even before that earlier law, you could go down and get a temporary marriage commissioner's certificate for 3 days, and anybody could marry anybody that they asked them to perform the wedding. So I don't think that it's expanding in terms of who performs weddings. And I certainly, the intent of the prior bill was to actually protect the rights of religious individuals who had priorities for their religion about who they would marry, so they couldn't be forced to marry somebody that was outside their traditions. So, for example, a rabbi who in their synagogue would only marry people who were members of the synagogue, they could say, I'm sorry, you're not a member of the synagogue. I don't have to perform the ceremony. And the law supports them in doing that. In the same way, somebody that might be asked, would you perform a marriage, say somebody that wanted to, a gay marriage that other they might not agree with, that law fully provides the ability to decline to do that and not force anyone to do it.
Sure.
Senator Schauer.
Thanks for that, Matt. I'm not here to scoff that. My daughter was married by my father-in-law here in Alaska a few years back. My wife and I initially were married by Justice of the Peace and the military, being on the road. So I get it. It's not the point. I just was curious if you had thought about it or if there was, you know, any feedback or pushback on it for the record. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Schauer. Senator Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm looking at the chart with the residents versus non-residents marriages. And I got to admit, when I first saw this, I was a little surprised at how many weddings we have that are two non-residents. But I'm thinking it over, and I'm wondering if you have other data that support the talk about how big the destination wedding side of it is. Because the other thing that pops into my head is we've got a lot of military. To some extent, you got a couple of other industries like the mining industry or the fishing industry that bring in a lot of non-residents as well. And so, you know, for example, I've seen a few instances in the Fairbanks area that I can remember where it's an Army and an Air Force or maybe two Army that, you know, both got moved up here and met, and they kept their residencies back in their home state. So you read the marriage license, and it's one from Georgia and one from Idaho or something along those lines. Is there a way to tease that out of the data here to show who are actually coming here to get married and who just happened to be here and get married?
Through the chair, Representative Myers and Representative Matt Clayman, I did ask whether they had more detail, and the answer was that they didn't. Do we have another testimony scheduled for today?
Yes.
So I think that the best answer in terms of the destination wedding business, we've got one wedding photographer who can talk about the level of business that he has. But what we heard from, and there were, I think we talked with four or five different wedding photographers, and they talked about that they essentially have full calendars all summer. Mm-hmm. That it's a very, very busy business to do the wedding photography, and a large number of people that they get contacted from out of state. So I don't think it's not a statistic on the chart, but I think they can talk better than I can about the scope of their business.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Senator Myers. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative, for the bill and for being here today. Less thanks for using the religious liberty example that, as the intermarried son of intermarried parents, sets my teeth on edge more than any other. But yes, that religious liberty means people get to do that. The question I had, though, was about the legislative ethics part of the bill. I guess, is that just belt and suspenders? My sense is that performing these, solemnizing these marriages, which I've had the privilege of doing a few times as well, and it's wonderful, it's hard for me to think of that as performing public duties. Has there been a ruling from the Ethics Committee that language is necessary, or is this sort of protective?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, again, Representative Matt Clayman, those amendments were actually something that was requested by Representative Vance, who had down in Homer performed a number of wedding ceremonies when she would get the 3-day license before she became a legislator, and I think she's performed some since she was a legislator under the authority provided. And she was worried that it could kind of get out of control with some. The example that that we talked about was, well, what happens if somebody says, will you perform the wedding in the middle of an eight-day cruise? And should the legislator be able to take the eight-day cruise and all the meals on the cruise ship as kind of thank you for performing the ceremony? And we didn't, we came up, the language was what we worked out with Representative Vance, because the goal was to try to say some level of transportation, like fly to the glacier on the helicopter to perform the ceremony, is kind of as comes with doing it, doing the ceremony, and you go to the reception afterwards and there's a, you know, there's a nice meal that probably has a value of over $15. And we wanted to make it so that you didn't have to declare that. I think at some point when you get to the, you know, one would hope that if a legislator took a cruise, a multi-thousand-dollar cruise, and somebody else paid, and they were doing their ceremony as the legislator, and somebody else paid, that they would probably need, they probably would disclose that. It doesn't specifically say that, but I think the goal is the more incidental expenses would be considered. I think that language, we could try to spend a lot more time being more specific, but I think the spirit of it was to try to recognize that that what would be more incidental expenses, we wouldn't have to declare on our ethics disclosure.
Thank you. All right. Thank you, Senator Keel. With no other questions from the committee, we'll go to your invited testimony. And you have first up would be Joe Connolly, photographer and manager at Chugach Peaks Photography. And so, Mr. Connolly, if you can hear me, please state your name, any affiliation, and your location, and begin your invited testimony.
Sure. My name is Joe Connolly, and I own Chugach Peaks Photography in Anchorage. And I'd like to say, to start, I'm very pleased to see the amendment to increase the minimum age on those legally allowed to marry. That wasn't part of the original process that I had envisioned, but as you guys are probably more than aware, this is, you know, a great addition. And I'm going to let the testimony of some of the victims to what's essentially child human trafficking speak for themselves on that subject. I'm going to focus more on the witness requirement, because that's how I got involved in this in the beginning. So thanks, Matt Klayman, for taking us on. It's been multiple years, and I appreciate you continuing the process here. So now on to myself and the interest in the bill. The one standing requirement to have two witnesses present at a marriage ceremony. I've been photographing weddings in Alaska since 2006. I approached Representative Klayman before the pandemic derailed the legislative process and asked him if he could help us fixing this one major problem we face in Alaska when we're working with people that are getting married in our state, and that's the witness requirement. We get about 400 to 500 couples every year based on the data that come to our state to get married. Many of them are alone, that is, they don't bring family or friends. Additionally, there's another 4,000 to 4,500 weddings of local Alaskans each year, and many of those weddings are also without family or friends present. So I'd like to emphasize that it's not just the destination wedding. That's a huge part of it, but there's a lot of people that get married in this state that are from this state that also don't want to have a large group of people present at their wedding. Requiring two witnesses to be present at the wedding is an unfair burden on those getting married in Alaska and for the locals, for locals preferring privacy from either their family or strangers. Often marriage commissioners are tasked with finding witnesses for people to fulfill the state requirement. This is an unfair burden to place on the commissioner, and the witness in attendance has to give up time during their day to attend the wedding of someone they might not even know will never meet again, and they're simply doing this as a favor for the marriage commissioner. Many people choose Alaska as a destination wedding location because of its remoteness, scenic beauty, independence, and grandeur. The state has granted virtually anyone who is over the age of 18 and sound mind to perform a marriage ceremony with ease, as Representative Klayman alluded to in the three-day license. One only needs to make a quick trip to the courts to pick up that one-day commissioner license. However, here's where the state is going to make it more difficult and burdensome. The state then proceeds to say, by the way, we will let anyone marry you, anyone at all, but you must bring two guests with you, family or friends. And if you don't have those people available, that's fine, but you must be willing to allow two complete strangers to attend your wedding, and you don't have a choice. Oh, and it's on you to find those strangers while you're here. And if you want to go get married somewhere remote and private, if you want to hike up to the top of the mountain, if you want to fly out to the glacier, you have to bring those people with you. You can't have your own wedding the way you want it unless you absolutely can find these two extra people. So this, it sounds kind of like an extreme thing, but we do this every day almost in the summertime. We're flying places, we're hiking places, and it just illustrates the point that the state is unfairly putting limitations on people's choices and freedoms with an unnecessary legal requirement that has absolutely no meaningful purpose in this day and age. And I'll leave it at that, and I'll take any questions if anybody has any.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Connolly. I have a first question up. I read the bill when it was brought to me, and I thought, you know, we're getting rid of the witnesses. And then I did a little research, and I found out that 22-ish states require two witnesses, 22-ish states require zero witnesses, and six or so require one witness. So a question for Mr. Connolly, is it a benefit? I mean, just from knowing what you know from seeing what you see, is it a benefit from going from two to one, or is it really only a benefit going from two to zero?
I think the benefit would be going from two to zero. You know, when you look at the process of getting married, you have to apply for the license, and you both have to sign it as a bride and a groom, or a bride and a bride, and a groom and a groom of the same-sex marriage. But either way, both people have to sign it in the presence of either the clerk at the Bureau of Vital Records or the officiant who married them. Additionally, the officiant that marries them has been determined to be 18 years of age, of sound mind. They're either clergy, they're a representative, or they obtained the one-day license from the state of Alaska. So the person marrying them has been determined competent. They have to sign the license at the Bureau of Vital Records. One person does. And if there was ever any doubt to whether this wedding happened or not, you could always ask that the officiant, because they were there. I think every single person probably these days has photos of their wedding. There's no doubt that that happened. And if you look at Hawaii, if you look at Florida and a lot of other states, there's no witness requirement at all. And I don't think that makes those weddings any less important or any less valuable. I don't think it makes them any less, you know, successful. And I don't think that it leads to increased, like, marriage fraud, if you will. You know, I think if you talk to the folks in Hawaii, Florida, and all the other states that don't require it, they're not running into huge problems because they don't have witnesses. The original witness requirement, if you go back hundreds of years, was because in the Church of England, they couldn't keep track of the records very well, and things got lost all the time, and there was a state to worry about, you know, if somebody died, who's the next of kin, and were you actually married to this person, and there was a lot of paperwork problems. And I think, you know, if you go to the Bureau of Vital Records now down in, you know, or in Anchorage, and you ask them if, you know, how often do you lose marriage licenses, it's probably not very often. Everything's computerized right now. I mean, I've never certainly heard of it. So I think the original intent is now lost, and it's more of a formality and a tradition that's unnecessary at this point.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Connolly. Senator Myers.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Connolly, so I'm just thinking to myself here, if you're the photographer, aren't you one of the witnesses?
I can be, but sometimes I'm also the person who marries them. So I'll give you a hypothetical story that may or may not have happened at some point in the past. if you were to go for a hike, say Hatcher Pass or Crow Pass or Turnagain Pass, some nice beautiful mountain setting, and you're the photographer, and you have a bride and groom who have flown up from somewhere far away, and they don't have a single family member, and they want to go do a 6 to 7 hour hike to get to the most remote, beautiful place imaginable, but they're afraid of helicopters, they don't want to fly in, then the photographer can marry the person. And as well, if you have two people there, you could have a photographer marrying them and then maybe one witness, or vice versa. But, you know, the photographer could marry them, put the camera on a tripod, set it up, and if we had this bill passed, legally marry them out in the middle of nowhere and not have to have anybody else go out with them.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Senator Schauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This could be for the Rep. Klayman or our invited guest. a concern I have, because I have a very strong libertarian side that people have free will to do this their way. That's why I'm not, you know, against this in any sense, like from a religious perspective or something else. But it was mentioned in the military up here, and having been in there for 24 years and having gone through a number of proceedings as an operations officer and commander, and my non-commissioned officer, senior chief petty, probably get it wrong with the Coast Guard rank here, has probably seen this as well, as you do end up with a lot of young men and women that come up at a very young age, you know, and you have an 18-year-old, right, you know, in the Army, and he's got a 16-year-old girl he meets, and he's got his 18-year-old buddy, and he applies for the license, and nobody really denies these. There's not a lot of cross-checks. What I have seen in over that long career, and I'm sure Roger has as well, is a lot of divorces and nasty things that come from that. A concern I have of not having the witnesses, because I know it says, oh, there's some cross-checks here, but you can't find the parents. And that often happens, depending on the cases and what it might be. What have we done that might eliminate some cross-checks or safety checks without the witness, having some other people that have to be a part of this process go, hey, man, are you doing the right thing here? Are you sure? As I can tell you, I've seen a lot of broken stuff happen from these young people doing this, and this is a very young age. And I agree with the moving the age up. I think that's a really positive trend. But even 18, you know, and a 16-year-old girl and an 18-year-old guy in the Army, you know, a private, I mean, there's some problems here. So I'm just concerned that we may be going maybe a little too, loose is not the right word, Mr. Chairman, but I do have concerns on how we see a lot of that, and I don't know how to address it. Somebody could mention it.
Can I respond? Joe Connolly, invited testimony.
Actually, Joe, that's probably more a question directed to me.
I have an opinion if it's available to share.
go ahead and let Mr. Connolly tell the story, but I'll add.
All right, Mr. Connolly, you want to go ahead?
Yeah, I'd just like to say that I hear what you're saying, and what I can say from my own experience, and I think if you thought about this, you might extrapolate the same outcome. I don't know, but if you come up here to get married, and you're 18 years old, two 18-year-old military people, let's say, and you're a young guy and you're going to marry to your young bride, you're not going to be looking to your buddy for approval, and you're not going to be looking to your parents for approval. And this state requirement that you have two witnesses is literally just a checkbox. The witnesses don't have to be related to you. What you're suggesting is somebody should be present that's a family member or a friend who can talk some sense into these people. But the state doesn't require that. The state requires two random humans to be physically present over the age of 18. And that doesn't do you any good. If we go grab two people off the street and sign your license, they don't know who you are, they're not going to talk any sense into you. So it's kind of irrelevant.
Mr. Chairman, just before Matt, may I to add to his question? That may be true. Thank you. But that's also probably not how it normally happens. I doubt you go grab two people off the street. Hey, can you sign this? I just got married.
No, we actually do that all the time.
Do you really? You just grab two random strangers off the street?
Every single week.
Wow. That's actually horrifying to me, Matt,
that's why I want to remove this witness requirement. It's the whole point. It's super weird. It's really awkward when the bride and groom are at a park and they go up to, like, a mom pushing a stroller with her grandma or her mother, and we say, hey, you saw these people just got married. Can you sign this piece of paper? It's super weird. It's awkward, and people don't like it, which is why a few years ago I started this whole process.
Representative Clayman.
Mr. Chair, through the chair to Senator Schauer and Representative Matt Clayman again. Your question actually is more specific to the child marriage context. So you've got a 16-year-old wanting to marry the 18-year-old, and what came out of the House before it was amended in Senate Health and Human Services was only the parents had to consent to the marriage for the underage marriage. You didn't have to have with the court proceeding. And the amendment the change that happened in the Senate committee was to require the court to be involved in that decision. And I've actually talked with folks from the court about, like, how often do they see? The answer is not very often. When they do have court proceedings that take place, the report I got was that the judges actually tend to be very detail-oriented. It's not like, oh, nice to see you, have a great day. And a couple of the cases I heard about where that was approved, the judge actually, the parents came in and said, we want them to get married. And then the judge sent the parents out of the room, out of the courtroom, and said, and because the judge wanted to be confident that the child that was underage married actually knew what they were doing and weren't being pressured by anybody and understood kind of the whole dynamic. And I heard reports of, I mean, people that you kind of came out of saying, yep, this is a person that's under 18, but they very much knew what they wanted to do. And so I think by adding in the, even with parental consent, you still have to go in front of the judge and say, these folks know what they're doing because they're under 18. I think that's a really important part. If we're not going to have child marriage banned, and under 18 is banned with no exceptions, I think it's important to have the court involved, because a lot of the stories we heard about some parents that really pressure their kids to get married for one reason or another. And I'm not trying to disparage any parents, but it happens and you hear later about how it didn't work out very well. I think you also raise a very important issue, which we're, I'm very much aware of, is in the military context, there has been some incidents of kind of, I don't know the right way to phrase it, but people, you know, somebody's going off to war, getting shipped overseas. This is the loving girlfriend. Oh, they get married a week before the person ships off. They're gone for 6 months, and when they come back, the wife is nowhere to be seen. A bunch of property has been sold. It's just gone. It's gone terribly. And this bill probably can't really, in the libertarian world at some point, this bill probably can't solve all those problems. I think from a commander standpoint, and you know, both of you in officer positions, I suspect you probably have conversations with young folks in the military saying, do you know what you're doing here? I mean, I can't stop you from doing it, but do you really want to do that? And so at some level, I mean, that's that libertarian side. Is it really the state's role to try to check all those boxes, or where's the point where the community needs to come and say, do you know what you're doing and why you're doing this? And, you know, a family friend was dating somebody that had been married very early in his military career, and it didn't last very long, and had all kinds of problems, and it had a lot of those same features about people didn't really think through what they're doing. But
I understand. It makes more sense, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. I just wanted to go through that. I appreciate it.
Right. Okay. Thanks, Senator Schauer.
Senator Kuehl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I very much appreciate the distinction between someone under 18 after the bill and adults. I think that the fact that you could have random witnesses today, you could pay witnesses today, speaks to maybe this having outlived its usefulness. In terms of the concern that Senator Schauer was expressing, certainly one of the times that I was honored to officiate, to solemnize, I used the 3-day waiting period, because they weren't people I knew, to speak with them a couple times, make sure that they had thought about these things. Certainly, I don't have the qualifications that the rabbi who married my wife and me did. And he required several conversations. But does the bill do anything to remove that three-day, I don't know if you want to call it a waiting period, a think about it period. Do we change that in any way here? Does that remain a safeguard?
And through the chair, Senator Kuehl, no, it makes no changes to that.
I just want to confirm, did you just confirm that your wife required several conversations to marry you, Senator Kuehl?
Mr. Chairman, that was the rabbinic requirement. My wife actually proposed.
Senator Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kind of along the same lines of, I'm curious, as we're talking about consent and you know, do you know what you're doing and sort of thing. It was interesting to me on page 5, talking about what the verifier is supposed to do either before or after the ceremony. It says you're supposed to confirm that each party intends to marry the other party. I'm curious why we put the word intends there rather than consent. Because that's what we've been talking about all along, especially when we're talking about the child marriage or underage marriage, however you want to phrase that. We've been talking a lot about consent and trying to make sure that somebody isn't getting bamboozled into something with regard to human trafficking or something along those lines. Why? Just curious about the wording there.
Through the chair,
Representative Klayman.
Through the chair, Senator Myers. Representative Matt Klayman, it's always dangerous when you ask an attorney that is between intentional conduct and consenting to conduct. But I think the use of the word intent was purposeful, and because I think that intent reflects a greater thought than consent. And we've actually been debating this and exploring this in the world of not that this is part of this bill, but we've been having a lot of discussions about consent in the world of sexual assault. And so in the world of sexual assault, the question about what level of action or inaction is enough to reflect consent. And a lot of times the debates in sexual assault get to do with what level of kind of passive participation counts as consent. Marriage needs a little more than that. Actually, it needs a lot more than that. It really means people looking at each other and say, I want to be married to you. I don't just want to say, well, you know, you said let's get married today, so I guess that's okay. You really want somebody to say, this is the person I'm making a real commitment to, and I'm not fooling anybody. I know exactly what I'm doing, and I intend to do this.
Okay. Just a comment to that, Mr. Chair. It's interesting hearing that coming from the lawyer, because to a non-lawyer, consent actually seems more seems stronger than intent. So it's interesting coming from the legal perspective, it's the other way around. Thank you.
All right. What we'll do at this point is we're going to go back to invited testimony. I just want to let the committee members know we do have Jerry Anderson from Legislative Ethics standing by, and I'll probably, if we get around to it before the end of the meeting, I have at least one question for him. But now, and I'm going to apologize because I see several different spellings of this name, and I can imagine several different pronunciations of this name. But I believe I'm going to go to Reverend Sean Mulhern with Celtic Ministries. And if you care to state your name and your affiliation and your location, and you could begin to provide your invited testimony.
Yes, this is Reverend Kean Mulhern with Celtic Ministries out of Wasilla, Alaska.
Thank you. If you go ahead and proceed.
So, I would like to answer one question right off the bat. When you were asking the determination between licenses that were from out of state and those like of military people that wouldn't show necessarily to be out of state, the licenses do show them as in-state people because they are marked with either like J. Bear, Fort Richardson, or whatever. They are recognized as an in-state wedding, not as an out-of-state wedding.
Thank you for that clarification. Did you get that center shower? Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, sorry.
So, I think the amendments that have happened in this House Bill 52 is fantastic, of raising the minimum age. I support that 100%. The problem I have with the witnesses is that there's no way to document who those witnesses are. And somewhat like Joe said, many of times witnesses are chosen by the couple in a random situation at the park. Two people will be pulled from the parking lot on their request and moved to the witness. Nobody knows who they are. Nobody would ever be able to find them because there is no information on the license that leads you back to that person. Nobody even knows if they're in good standing, felons, or anything. There's no driver's license required, nothing. So because of that reason, it kind of takes the two witnesses and doesn't really make them, you know, somebody that's necessarily viable to be an actual witness for the wedding. If all you're doing is witnessing the signatures of the people, then that has no bearing then on how the wedding was performed. Was it performed in the proper way? So I think there's a big problem with having the two witnesses because there is no proof of who they are or what they are.
All right, Reverend Mulhern, are there any questions from the committee? All right, seeing none, at this point, thank you, Reverend. At this point, I'm going to move on to Mr. Jerry Anderson. And I have just one question. I just want to confirm that he was able to take a look at the bill before us. And so, Mr. Anderson, if you're there, would you please state your name, your affiliation, and your location to put yourself on the record?
Yes, my name is Jerry Anderson. I'm the administrator for the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics, and I'm calling in today from my Anchorage office.
And were you able to review the amendment? The bill?
Yes, and I apologize for being on speakerphone. I think this probably is better. I have done that at considerable length.
All right, thanks so much. You were very loud before. You're much better right now, so you're doing perfect. So, Mr. Anderson, if you could just speak on what the changes in Section 1 are intended to do. Basically, the adding Section D in Section 1.
Chair, I believe that this section, with the addition of it, harmonizes other sections of the Legislative Ethics Act in terms of what is actually being received through those because it adds to that as being accepting travel and hospitality outside a gift with the addition of D in this section. It also harmonizes the section under AS 2460-085, where there's restrictions on earned income and honoraria. Specifically, that section deals with an appearance or a speech by a legislator. And so it would take it outside those two sections, and I believe that that's the benefit of adding it in this particular bill.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Senator Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Anderson, just a quick question. So if the bill passed as it was now, and let's say somebody offered to pay for my travel, I live in Fairbanks, somebody offered to pay for my travel down to Anchorage to officiate a ceremony, what would be the reporting requirements for that?
There would not be a reporting requirement under the Legislative Ethics Act as it is currently stands, and with this addition. Through the chair.
So to confirm, it's not required now, and with this addition, it still would not be required, correct?
That would be correct through the chair. That would be correct with regard to this, just as the restrictions on earned income and honoraria, where you may be accepting travel expenses, are not required for disclosure to the ethics office.
All right. Are there any other questions? Senator Shower.
One for the sponsor, one for Jerry. For Matt first, does this require only in Alaska, or can it happen somewhere else? Did you travel to Hawaii, say?
Through the chair, Senator Shower, Representative Matt Klain, no, we can only give people permission in Alaska. Okay. If you want to go to Hawaii and marry a friend, you got to get licensed by the state of Hawaii.
Okay, thank you. And the second question.
That's a pure jurisdiction issue.
And possibly get elected in Hawaii.
Yes. So the second Senator question,
Shower.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, is for Jerry. Then, and based on the answer to Senator Myers, what would be considered then, reasonable or prudent limitations on it? So, for example, like I think Rep. Klayman brought it up, said, somebody says, hey, I'll pay for your, down the passage cruise inside Alaska, a $2,500 package for, wink, wink, you and your wife to go on a paid vacation, but you're going to marry me in the process and paid for, would that be something that would set up a legislator that either could get themselves in trouble, maybe unintentionally, or maybe one down the day, because legislators never take advantage of the rules and do things unethically. Where would we look at a limit there, Jerry, where you might say something that was reasonable and prudent or cross a line? In other words, it seems like we might be a little too...
If I could offer, say you're invited to a lodge during or sockeye season or something like that, you get a float plane trip to a lodge to officiate a wedding, at what point does the flight out there become a problem? Mr. Anderson?
Jerry's answering this.
Through the chair, Senator Shower, and the chair, I believe that is covered, again, under – the AS 2460-085, where you would not be able to seek or receive compensation in this travel and hospitality could be considered part of that, that would be significantly greater than the value of the services rendered, taking into account the higher rates generally charged by specialists in a profession. And so the committee would be looking at that kind of standard to judge whether or not you received more than the regular, significantly greater than the value of the services normally rendered for that.
Thank you. Ed. Also, I was curious, like a Bell helicopter flight to the Chuck E. Cheese, so they can do their wedding while standing in 6 inches of, you know, Chuck E. Cheese. Yeah, that'd be a very expensive trip, but I could imagine it would be covered. Well, with that, are there any other questions at this time? Seeing none, I'm going to thank Mr. Connolly and Reverend Mulhern and Jerry. Mr. Anderson, thank you all for offering your expertise today. With no other questions, Representative Clement, do you have any closing comments for today?
Appreciate the committee taking the time to hear the bill. Appreciate the questions.
All right. So at this time, I'm going to set an amendment deadline for 12 noon on Friday, May 13th. And we will now set House Bill 62 aside. All right. Is there any other business before the committee? Seeing none, our next meeting is Friday, May 13th at 1:30 p.m., and we are adjourned today at 2:20 p.m.